And we're continuing the interview with Jerry Zacharias. It is April 30th, 2005.
It used to just be called the administration building.
Is it? Well, we're continuing now talking about your guide dogs, and you were telling me you were telling me about problems with stairs before you had one. Tell us more about that.
Okay. Well, when I was about three, a little girl, I don't think she did it on purpose, but she pushed me down the stairs, and I broke my collarbone, and I've been scared to death of stairs ever since. And so one of the reasons I wanted a guide dog is that I was so afraid of stairs. And the old post office in LeGrand didn't have railings on the steps when I was growing up. So I was always scared to go up and down those stairs. I did it. And I'd go inside the old post office and go up and down the stairs. But one of the first things I did right after I got Sheila was to go up to the college and go up and down the grand staircase in front of the what they used to call the administration building, but it's now
Inlow Hall.
but that was quite exciting to think that I could go up and down those stairs without being scared. And I tried every place in the grand that had stairs, and would go like in the the Secretaria Annex building that had an elevator. I'd go up the stairs. When I'd go up, my dentist was in that building at that time, and I'd go up and down the stairs instead of riding the elevator because I wanted all the practice I could get with my dog.
So that was a new level of freedom for you, as
right.
Well as you overcame a challenge by
doing
that?
Well, I'm still a little timid with stairs, but mostly I'm okay. But one of the things they did in training is they had this huge stairway in, I think it's the City Hall in San Francisco. It's a big marble stairway, and we had to go up and down that. And that really scared me, but because there was no railing. But now that was the first time. But now they have a railing on it, and if I can just touch the railing, I'm all right. It's just that I still have that fear. But the dog goes down up and down the stairs just fine, and I haven't had any accidents, so. It's worked.
What other kinds of things freed you up and you did in LeGrand then? Or Union County?
Yeah. Well, like I said, it freed me up to go visiting and things like that I like to do. And I used to go to Portland and from LeGrand and visit friends. I could go on the bus and meet them, or I could go down in the car and go down on the bus downtown and meet friends and go for lunch.
And you could take your dog?
I could take the dog. And
Did you say that the drivers knew you or got to know you on some of these runs?
Right. Some of the drivers, even like when the Greyhound used to go through Union and I used to go back and forth, the drivers got to know me because I'd go back and forth to see my folks. So anyway, when I went down to get Sheila, when they put me on the bus, we told them that I was going to get a guide dog. So this driver, I'd ridden with him before, so he looked after me until he changed to another driver. He saw to it that I was okay, you know, when we stopped at rest stops and things. And then he turned me over to the next driver. So then the next driver passed me the next one. So it was really nice because I got to know them and I could trust them, and they were really careful, you know, good with me. In fact, when I got to San Rafael, they weren't there to meet me. Guide dogs was supposed to meet me at the bus, and there was nobody there, and this driver was so concerned that he wouldn't leave. It was the end of his run, and he took me over to the counter and got me a cup of coffee, and he said, "Now you sit here until I find somebody from Guide Dogs." So he walked all over that huge bus station that they had then, and finally found the Guide Dog person. And what happened is that we had told him I was coming. They knew I was coming from Oregon, but they thought I was coming from Portland, and that the bus that I took from LeGrand went through Winnemucca and went up through that way, you know, going toward Idaho and then into California. So he was looking at a Portland bus and didn't. So, but this driver wouldn't let me. He wouldn't leave me without it. And it's a wonderful way. You know, you get to know people when you have a guide dog, because people will offer to help. Sometimes you don't need help, but I got lost just the other day. Not exactly lost, but my dog kind of missed the curb, and I was going kind of down the street, and somebody that I know stopped me and helped me get back on course. Dogs are not, they're not human. They make mistakes. They don't make them very often, but they make mistakes. And that happened to be a day that I wasn't in any danger, but she just was going along the edge of the curb instead of on the sidewalk.
I see. Now, when you became divorced over in La Grande, was there ever a period of time that you lived on your own over there?
Yeah, I lived alone in La Grande for 2 or 3 years before I moved to Seattle. I get along really quite well because I'm lucky enough that I have lots of good friends, and I have, but I do all my own housework and cooking and take care of my mom. I can do most things. There are things, I have many, many friends, and I'm very lucky. So like when they come in, I have one very close friend that takes me shopping, but if somebody comes in for any reason, I ask them if they could look over my mail, and I have a friend that writes my checks for me and helps me pay bills and stuff like that.
Did that happen while you were living on your own in La Grande?
Yes, I had a lot of...
Where did you live in La Grande when you were on your own?
When I was on my own, it was on Cedar, but it was a little house, it belonged to a friend of mine. She and her husband had, there was a little house in back of her mother's home. It had been, I think, a garage. And it was right after the war, they built this, they remodeled it and made a real cute little house. And so when I was on my own, Gina May let me rent from her, and I lived there. So I was in this little, real cute little house behind her house. And I was only about 2 blocks from my folks, but I could walk to town, and I could walk down to their place, and I had friends that would come in and help read my mail.
How did that make you feel when you did that? Was that a good feeling of being independent?
Well, yeah.
Living on your own, I mean.
Yeah, you get, you know, I got lonely sometimes at night, in the evenings, sure. When, you know, because everybody would be with their families. But actually, right now, I mean, since Dale died, that was the thing. I got divorced in La Grande and then remarried my first husband. So, and my husband died about 5 years ago, Dale did. And even though I'm alone and I get lonely for him, I really like the fact that I can do things. I keep up, I have to get somebody to help with the yard. That's, I do pull weeds and water flowers and stuff, but I can't keep it like it should be kept. But I can do all the cooking, and I do the cleaning and the laundry and all that stuff.
When you lived alone, you did that then?
Right. I've always done that, because I started doing it when I could see, and I got a lot of criticism from some of my friends because I didn't teach Kay to do all these things or make her do it. You know, they said, well, make her do it. Make her do the laundry. Make her do the stuff. She did help cook, but that's because we enjoyed cooking together. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want her to feel burdened by her mother. I didn't want her to think that, well, I have to do it for my mom. I wanted her to have a life of her own, and I never regretted it. So I kept saying, if I make her do the ironing, then when I lose my sight, which I knew I was going to at that time, I'd have to learn all over again. I said, if I keep doing it, then I can, you know, I'll be able to do it.
Was that, did you ever discuss that with her?
Not really, no.
That was your own idea, and you carried forward with it.
Well, I just didn't think she was he, you know, children don't be asked to be born. And to make them be responsible for me, I didn't think it was fair. And as it turns out, she's grown up to be, she respects the fact that she's proud of the fact that I can do things. Dale was proud of the fact that I could do things. And I didn't lean on him all that much either. He believed in me being independent, and so, like, if I needed help, he helped me. I mean, he did all the checks, and he helped read the mail, and but I did all the cooking and the cleaning, and if I needed help, he was there. But he made me feel independent, and like when we would, like I go walk and meet friends and have tea almost every morning, and he had coffee with the boys. And that's the way we liked it. It was my independence. He was proud of the fact that I could get out and walk and go places. But if I needed him, he was there. You know, it was, and I liked that. And that's now I like the independence. And I liked it in LeGrand. I could go anywhere with the dog. I could go pretty much everywhere I wanted to go. And yet I had friends that took me places too, and that was great because I love people.
Shall we talk about some of these friends that you and I discussed earlier in the picture book here? tell us a little more about your friend Nina, because there are a lot of pictures in this book.
Oh. Well, Nina's name was Nina Wells when she lived in LeGrand, and some people in LeGrand would remember her because she lived there from probably about 1930 or so, until she got married, I think, in about 1955 or 53, something like that. Maybe it was 50. Anyway, in the 50s. And then she moved away, but we were good friends. We lived on the north side of town, and I lived on Russell Street. She lived on Z Avenue. And then there were friends like Gene Winslow, who lived out on Spruce Street, and he used to come, and his father had died when he was in the third grade, so he used to come and to our store, and my dad kind of took an interest in him, and he'd come, he'd hang around while we were at the store, and he'd send Gene on errands. If I wasn't available, we'd send either one of us to the bank and things like that with a deposit or to get change and stuff. And he'd send us to deliver. One of the neighborhood people wanted just a few groceries that we could carry on, you know, walking or on our bikes. He'd send either Gene or me to do it. And so he was like a brother to me. I always felt like we used to fight like cats and dogs, but we were the best of friends, too.
Uh-huh. Now, you said that Nina was a person who also wore glasses, mm-hmm. because I see she does.
Her vision didn't deteriorate. I don't think that her eyes ever got much worse. She still doesn't seem to have, she still drives and everything, so.
Didn't you say that was a drawing point, however? That kind of brought you together a little bit?
Because I think we were both self-conscious wearing those old horn-rimmed glasses. They weren't very attractive. And neither of us were exactly what you'd call glamorous, so it kind of drew us together. And then we found out that we liked to do a lot of the same things, and she was an only child too, so we just spent much of our time together, and we'd go, we both were long-legged, and we liked to jump, and there was an irrigation ditch that went down, let's see, that was X Avenue they lived on, and anyway, we'd go jump over this ditch, and in the certain times of the year it would be pretty high and you almost couldn't make it, but we'd do it anyway, and we just had fun doing stuff like that. It was kind of a challenge to see how far we could jump, and we used to go play in the playground at school after school was out, and one of the things we did that was probably very dangerous, but we did it. And that was the old Greenwood School had an outdoor fire escape. It was a big slide that you were supposed to go out the door, and the one of the rooms up there, upstairs, and go down, if there was a fire, go down this slide. Well, we would go over, and it wasn't just us, I mean, it would be a whole bunch of us that did this. We'd climb up this slide. It was kind of hard going up a slide. You didn't have anything to hold on to. You just had to, you know, work your way up the slide by, I don't exactly remember how we did it, but we did. Then we'd get up the top and then slide down. Oh, we had so much fun. And I don't know that my parents ever knew that we did that.
Yeah. Yeah, I take it you weren't supposed to do that.
I don't think so.
Uh-huh.
Although they didn't have anybody guarding the school, so all the kids did it. I don't know of anybody ever really getting hurt from it, but it could have been dangerous because it was way up there, second, you know, on the second or third story, actually, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Second story. It's pretty high up there, anyway. We were just little kids.
There's a picture in here that says Girls League Float, Armistice Day at LeGrand High School, 1941. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. We were carrying the flag. We had a big flag, and we were holding that up, I think. That's what it seems like. Maybe that wasn't the one. I know one parade we were in, I had a huge, like the flags they give you when somebody dies, a veteran dies.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Or maybe we just rode in that one.
Well, this one, you're riding in it with some others. I can't read with, can't read it. Something Davis.
Oh, let's see. I don't know. Anyway, we used to do things like that. So I like to get into, you know, we were, Nina and I like to be in active things at school. So like, you know, parades or special things we did. And we always went to all the activities.
Were you in a parade in Union?
Mm-hmm. And, maybe that's where I carried
Mrs.
the flag.
Mrs. Burford was telling me she had seen you in a parade. In Union once.
Oh, recently? I mean, more recent than when
I
was there?
No, I think, well, I'm not sure
about that. I
was going
to say, we used to go, I have been in a parade in Union, I think, with guide dogs in recent years, but but before that, long time ago, when I belonged to some organization in Union, it was Junior Women's Club, we had a float, and I think it was for Armistice Day, and we carried the flag, and no, I think I was in the parade two or three years in a row. It was kind of fun. And then we were in they did a musical. Our Junior Women's Club did a musical one time. And since I'm not too talented, somebody else sang. They sang, She's Only a Bird in a Gilded Cage. And so they had me waltzing around on the stage holding a bird cage. I mean, it must have been pretty funny when I think about it. But it was fun doing it. So. And we decorated floats. I remember making flowers and putting them on the floats and things like that. So I'd like to get into a lot of things.
There's a wallet card here that says that you were a member of the Quill and Scroll.
Oh, yeah.
International, were you a high school journalist?
I used to think I'd like to be a journalist. I wrote for the newspaper, the school newspaper. Used to love to write. I don't care to anymore, but I used to love to. That was fun.
How long did you do that all through
high school? All through high school.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't get into anything in college. Well, the year that I went college right after the high school was right at the beginning of the war and of World War II, and most of the organizations just to kind of disband during the war years, and so I wasn't involved in hardly anything that year in college
because there weren't a lot of activities available.
Right.
Then.
Well, like there were no sports. There were hardly any boys. They were all girls. There was just nothing. There were no fun things to do that year.
You know, I do have to say that of the college pictures that I'm seeing here from your first year at Eastern, there is practically no men.
That's right, they weren't.
I haven't seen actually.
That's why.
Because
see, it was 1942, and that was the war started in 1941, And it was right in the middle of it.
That would have been after Pearl Harbor and all of that.
Then later, they while we were in that year, they did the Army Air Force took over the they didn't take over because we still had college there, but they took over some of the classrooms, and they had aviation cadets that were studying to be pilots in the Air Force, and they were in class there, so there was some dating of some of those guys. But they didn't intermingle. They weren't in any of our classes. They were in one end of the school. We were in the other.
So they were really strictly there for military training at that time.
And they had taken over the Sacagawea Hotel, which isn't there anymore, but that they had taken over the Sacagawea Hotel as a dormitory for these aviation students.
Then what happened after that? They would just go off to their assignment when they got done? Were these rotating classes?
They were rotating. So, they'd only be there maybe, I don't know, 2 or 3 months or something and take off. You really didn't get to know them that well. Most of us didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. We did get acquainted with a couple of them, but not well enough that they just, when they got ready to go, they went. I mean, you'd see them and talk to them and stuff, but you didn't know them well enough that when they took off, you didn't shed any tears because you didn't even know they were leaving. it wasn't that serious.
So could be almost easy to say that it was practically a women's college at that time.
There were in my chemistry class, there were 2 or 3 boys who were just under the age of being drafted. But they were, by the end of the year, they were gone.
Because
they'd been drafted. And there weren't many boys there. The only ones who were there were just under the... They were probably not quite 18, and so I'm 18 years old, so they weren't drafted yet.
Do you remember rationing and those programs that went on during that time?
Yeah, I still have rationing cards, and not cards, but rationing stamps that I had when I, during the war. I remember that... my dad had this grocery store, and people would come in, people that had never traded with him, when they heard that sugar and coffee were going to be rationed, they'd come in and buy droves and want to buy all the coffee and the sugar. Well, it didn't take my dad long to figure out that they weren't customers, so he'd sell some, but he mostly put it back for his regular customers because, he figured he owed it to them to have some food for them, and but I remember. And another thing I remember is that you had to, if you wanted, it wasn't rationed, but if you wanted toothpaste or shaving lotion, anything like that, that was in a metal tube, you had to turn in the empty tube in order to get a new tube, because they recycled the metal to melt it down. And you saved grease and turned it into them. They used it somehow in war. And like, that's how Mom learned how to take the grease off the top of food and save it later to make her soap, in much later years. But, we started doing that. If you had, if you roasted a chicken or roasted anything and you had that, the grease always comes to the top when it gets cold, you just skimmed that off and saved it for that and turned it in.
So originally it was a war effort that your mother learned to do that, and then she learned soap.
She didn't do soap till years later, but we learned how to save it and that sort of thing. And I can't remember what else we saved, but I know we saved grease and metal. Like I say, the tubes. It was always... And like other things were not rationed, but you had to stand in line to get home, like bed sheets or stockings, diapers. It was pretty hard to get flannel for diapers. Of course, now they're all disposable, but I ran across one of my daughter's diapers just the other day. They made wonderful dust rags.
I was going to say that the women that I see here with you in class, they're wearing socks, but I don't think I see stockings on anybody.
We didn't learn. When I was young, they didn't wear unless you dressed up. And when we dressed up, we wore stockings. But to go to school, we wore anklets. We always wore anklets. And then, when, of course, if you got a job or when you got out of school, you started wearing stockings. But when we were in college, we wore anklets. I don't think hardly anybody wore anything but anklets.
Would you like to talk a little bit about these Simon brothers that I see in here? There's quite a few pictures of them. I won't tell you all of them, but I see Keith and Bob. You have a lot of pictures. They must have been good friends.
Well, they were. They lived in Island City. It was Bob and Keith Simmons, and they were brothers. Bob worked at what used to be Hyde's. Well, maybe it still is. I haven't been over there for so long, but Hyde's. It used to be Hyde's grocery store on the corner when you go into Island City and then turn like you go to the bridge to go toward Cove or something. Anyway, that it was a big, at that time it was grocery and kind of an all-around general store. Anyway, he worked there when he got out of high school, so I knew him, and then I knew his brother Keith, and they were just kids in school. I kind of had a crush on one of them. But
so they went to high school with you?
Bob was out of high school before I met him, but Keith went to school with me. And Bob was just a year or so ahead of us.
So these were
schoolmates, or more or less.
Uh-huh.
And then they both went in the service, like everybody else. Remember too many. I knew a lot of kids, but I don't remember what happened to all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Although I keep in touch with Nina, or used to be Nina Wells,
uh-huh.
And our mutual friend Donna Beery. She lives in, they both live in Portland, and I keep in touch with them even now. That's been a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Because Nina's the same age I am, and Donna's 2 years younger, so it's been a long time we've been friends.
Now, when you, let's see.
And then I used to run around with another girl that's in Portland, too, and her name used to be Jean Ambrose, and she lives in Portland now.
Yes, there are pictures of her.
And she was a year younger than we were, than Nina and I, but we were good friends, and so I keep in touch with all three of them, even now, and the same with Gene Winslow and Velda Klein, who live in LeGrand. I keep in touch with them.
Now, there's a picture in here of Nina. There's two. One of them, she's standing next to Bob Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the next picture, and Bob Simmons is in his uniform.
Oh.
But in the next picture, Nina has it on.
Well, that was the thing that they used to do. It was the guys would come home and they'd want to have a picture taken in the guy's jacket. Well, you could do it with the Army, but it wasn't easy. I didn't ever try Dale's Navy top on because it was an over-the-top type of thing, so I never did wear his.
Uh-huh.
But,
yeah, she's got his jacket and belt and his hat. Oh, she's almost completely in uniform.
Yeah, off of his pants, huh?
Yeah, well, No, she still has a skirt on.
Yeah.
So.
yeah, she was a pretty nice girl. She wouldn't have changed pants with him.
Right.
We had fun in those days. It was different. You had a lot more, I think kids had a lot more responsibility when they were that age than they do now. I think kids now have more social life, where we had to do chores, and we had most of the kids now, they can't start working too young, a lot of them can't, and we kids started young. Now, I remember I couldn't do it because I helped at the store, but Nina used to go, and Nina and Jean, and I don't know about Donna, used to go every summer and pick berries and stuff. Now I don't think they can do that when they're too young. They can't allow that. But they used to make money during the summer to buy their school clothes, because everybody was having a rough time. First there was a depression, and then when the depression ended, the war came along, and even if you had the money, you couldn't buy it because it wasn't there to buy, because everything was going in the war material. And so that's one reason for the short skirts, is they were cutting back on material, and they just, so.
Oh, so that helped raise the skirt hems?
Well, yeah, they shortened skirts so they could use more material.
For more skirts.
For more skirts. And then after the war ended, then skirts went down clear about to your ankle. And all of a sudden, here everybody ended up, I happened to be pregnant about that time. So here I had short skirts that I couldn't wear because I was pregnant, but then after Kay was born, I couldn't wear my short skirts because the styles had gone clear down to your ankles. So you were left with all these short things that you couldn't wear anymore.
Did you care for that? Would you have preferred the short over the long?
Well, I didn't really I didn't really like the long ones too well, although I got used to them. But I liked the shorter ones better. I mean, they weren't as short as mini skirts. Right. They were short, but I liked them when they were short.
We're out of tape on this side here. And we are still continuing the interview with Jerry Zacharias. It is still April 30th, 2005.
I just happened to remember that at the first of the year of when I first went to college in 1942, that they had just built the first dormitory. And so some of my friends lived over there. I mean, met friends that lived over there. And
is that the building they call Hunt?
I thought it used to be Hoke Hall. But
Hoke.
I think Hoke is that, I think. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's
but
like
it was
from
the first dorm.
From that main building, the first one over across the grass and stuff was kind of, well, I can't tell you exactly, but it was called, I'm
right.
Pretty sure it was Hoke. Anyway, it was a dormitory, and then that when they took over for the Army guys took over that dorm. And so the girls that lived there they found homes in Le Grand for them. Like there was a large home down on 4th and Washington that was a huge house with many bedrooms. So they took that over, and the girls lived there as a dormitory, and there were a couple other places, but I don't remember where they were, but I happened to have friends in that one, so.
Did they, so it was taken over by the military, the same people who were doing their training there with, how long did that last?
I don't know, because see, then I
got... Oh, you were only there a year.
Yeah, and after I got out of school, I didn't pay that much attention, because then after Dale came home, it was still, the war was still on, and we went to Corvallis, so I don't know what happened.
Were freshmen or young students required to live in the dorm if they didn't come from Le Grand at that time?
I think they were supposed to, except there were exceptions, because my friend Nina lived with us. Her parents moved to Washington State in her senior year of high school, so we made arrangements through her parents, their consent and everything. They let her live with us.
To finish high school?
To go to college and finish. Well, see, I think they lived here till she graduated, so I think it was just college. But she lived with us for a couple of years of college. Yeah, so she didn't have to live in the dorm, but I think they couldn't just have apartments. They had to... For the first year or so, they had to live in a dorm, or probably, I think there were others that lived with family, and they considered us family. I don't know, I don't think anybody lied or anything. I think they just approved us. But anyway, it was practically, and by that time, except for the aviation students, it was practically a girls' school in about every way.
Now, it appears to me that both sets of your grandparents also lived in Le Grand.
Oh, well...
From some of the pictures that I see, anyway.
Well, it was not both sets, but it was my grandfather, on my mother's side, lived in Le Grand. He's the one that built the house we lived in on Russell Street. And so he lived there until he died. I think he died in December of 41, I think. But then my grandmother was from Nebraska, but she was a widow. I was my father's mother, and so she lived when her husband died and everything, and then she came and lived with us for a while, and then she'd go live with her son in Wyoming and her daughter in Nebraska. She'd go back there, and then she had a brother in Washington and at Washington State, and a sister in California. So she really didn't live any place. You know, I mean, her home, I guess, basically was, I think she did claim Le Grand as her home, because she spent more time with my parents than she did with any of the rest. But she really didn't have a home. I always felt sorry later, because she enjoyed keeping house and she enjoyed entertaining, things like that. And her daughter talked her into, her daughter and her other son, not my dad, but my uncle, talked her into giving up her home and just living with the family. People used to do that a lot in those days. And so anyway, but all she had really was, she had one of those huge steamer trunks that had like a wardrobe in it. I'd love to have had it. I don't know whatever happened to it when she died, but I don't know where I'd put it either. But everything she had was in that. And she would travel, stay with us, and then go somewhere else and stay. So she didn't actually, you know, live in Le Grand. I mean, she never really got out and really made friends. The only people that she was friendly with were my family's friends. So she didn't really have, I don't think she had a really excellent life that way. And then when they lived in Union, she lived with them for quite a long while, too. But she was not part of Union County, you know, not an old-timer there. Mm-hmm. But my grandpa was. He was an old-timer there.
Do you remember this centennial celebration where your father had to grow these whiskers and long beards?
Oh, yeah.
What was that about? Your mother explained it a little bit, too.
He didn't have to, but if they didn't, they would threaten to throw him into a tank of water. And so my dad grew this little goatee thing, and he didn't like it very well, but I think he kind of had fun with it, too. He griped about it, but I really think he thought it was kind of fun, because everybody was doing it. I mean, all the men, I mean, most of the men grew a mustache or a beard of some sort. And,
they did this in advance? They knew this
Place? Because it was planned for probably a couple years or so before they really hit the date. Uh-huh. And so they planned a lot of these things. And women, a lot of them made old-fashioned dresses to wear during the celebration, particularly for parades and things like that. But a lot of people wore old-fashioned long dresses and stuff like that. Just, you know, they could buy patterns and make these. Of course, nearly everybody sewed then, and they could make these outfits. And so it was just a fun thing. We all acted like kids playing dress up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was sort of fun. And I remember they had like a horse and carriage that you could ride in. You know, I'd pay, I don't know, 50 cents or something and get a ride around town on that. And then the American Indians, they had a big festival, big celebration with them. I don't know what tribes they were or where they came from for sure, because like I say, I wasn't always able to read everything, and I just went along with the crowd. But they had at the old high school football field, and they had all the bleachers and everything, they'd have Indian entertainment, which was really nice, dancing and all that. And
That was during the centennial.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And we had a neighbor at that time. We lived on Spring Street, and our neighbor, their name was Tall Chief, and I think they were from Oklahoma, but I'm not positive. Anyway, he was the coach at the high school, and he was quite active in this. He and his wife were real active in the getting this Indian celebration together, And it was so popular that they tried it for 3 or 4 years after that, during the summer. But the thing was, then, like a lot of other things, politics get into it, and there was some dissension among the people, and the tall chiefs moved away, and it was just, you know, it just went downhill.
What kind of dissension?
Oh, I don't know, just, you know, some people, I don't really know because I don't get into that kind of stuff, but I guess some of them thought that it should be done this way, and somebody else, no, it should be done that way, and they didn't, some of them didn't like this entertainment, and maybe somebody else wanted that entertainment, and
oh,
this stuff
so
like
sort
that.
Of squabbles about the
squabbles.
How it should take
yeah.
place. Or
right. It wasn't anything serious, and it wasn't, I mean, it was serious in that it lost, we lost it, but I mean, it was, wasn't anything dishonest or anything that I know of. It was just everybody wanted it done their way, and it finally just disappeared. Which was, it was sad because it was a really a nice celebration, and I know I always enjoyed going. They had these, like in the evenings, they'd have this entertainment, and it was kind of fun to go. And the lights at this stadium at that time, the lights had been purchased by several years before that, but my dad had been on in a softball league, and they had saved money through their admission to the softball games and bought the lights that they had there, so that was kind of nice. Softball, when I was in about the 8th grade, was along in there, 8th and 9th grade, it was a big thing around Le Grand. The men, there were no women involved in those days, but the men played softball and had, I don't know, they must have had a half a dozen teams in Le Grand, and then they'd play Baker and Pendleton, Enterprise, Elgin, all around. It was pretty great entertainment in the summertime.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking through that you have an album that's pretty much devoted to your guide dogs and your. It's pretty much guide dogs.
Yeah, it's all it is.
Here. And there's great books in it, but there's a lot of articles in here. this one from 1969 is a picture with you out of the Observer. Xi Alpha Mu meets.
Oh, that was a sorority I belonged to.
And this might have been just a general picture rather than
probably
really
was.
About the guide dog, but
yeah.
Your dog is in the front row here with you,
yeah.
Which would be natural.
That was Wally.
That was Wally.
Mm-hmm. He's a golden retriever, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Here's another picture. It doesn't have a date on it here, but it's a very interesting caption. It says, "Style show for visually impaired is a sleeper for some spectators." And you, there are some women sitting here, looks like inspecting clothing for some reason here, but all the dogs are lying on their side and they're sound asleep. I can practically see the snoring.
Yeah.
Going on here. That was in Seattle.
That was in Seattle, but it was at Nordstrom's in Seattle, and they had a fashion show for the blind, and I was lucky that they chose me to be one of the models, and so Wally was there. And it was kind of interesting because you walked around, and instead of regular fashion show, everybody had to feel with the fabric and the style and everything. So it was a touchy-feely type of style show. But it was interesting. It was fun. They brought out some of their nice clothes, you know, and had us wear them. And the store picked the outfits. And what I wore wasn't really to my liking, but it was what they wanted me to model, so that's what I modeled.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, that was kind of fun.
You've been in the paper a lot because of these dogs here. Now, here's another one with you and Wally, and you conducted workshops.
That was in Le Grand.
Mm-hmm.
We had, there for a while, we had, we started out with American Legion Auxiliary as kind of our sponsor, and we had craft workshops, and we had visually impaired people from LeGrand and Joseph and Union, I think. Anyway, quite a few people that would come. And we had the women in the auxiliary volunteered to help, and they'd help teach us different crafts. And we could either work on all the same thing, or we could take our own, what we like to do. I used to like to knit, but I still can knit. I just do other things. I can't find time to get everything into my days. But because now I'm trying to learn how to use a computer, which is driving me up the wall, but I'm working on it.
Do you think you'll catch on?
What I basically wanted it for was because I'd like to be able to write letters. And my daughter wants me to get on so I can do email. But anyway, I've learned how to turn it on and get into the document and write my letter. And I'm having problems figuring out how to get rid of it. You know, if I don't want to keep the letter I wrote,
delete it?
Yeah.
Cancel it?
And I have what they call, it's called JAWS, which is a funny thing, but anyway, it's a speech synthesizer that will read things to me and tell me what to do and stuff like that, which is, except that it's not as complete as what you see on the screen. What you would see on the screen, it's more to it. So mine's pretty abbreviated. I'm more limited in what I can do. And it has to all be done on a keyboard. You can't use a mouse. A blind person can't use a mouse because you can't control what you're doing.
Where it goes.
So I'm my daughter calls my computer my nightmare, and it sure is. But and it's always funny because the synthesized voice comes on and says, "Ready for a juror Zacharias."
It's not trained yet.
It's not trained yet. But anyway, but I like to knit, and so we used to teach knitting in that class and some placemats out of some kind of metallic stuff. And I can't remember what else we made. It's been a long time, but we had fun.
Okay, we're winding down here. You lived in LeGrand until when?
I think I left there about 1970.
And was that a marriage that brought you over here? Or?
Yeah, well, I left there, and Dale and I got married again.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a job in Seattle. He worked for the Seattle Times, so we went up there. And then we were in Seattle until he retired. Until we both retired from our jobs, and then we decided to come back. And he had been born in Pendleton. We liked Pendleton, so we just came here.
Mm-hmm. Now, so you got married to him again. You were both living over in LeGrand that time, or did he?
No, he'd been living in Seattle. It was kind of a freaky thing. I hadn't seen him for years, and his second wife had a large family, so they didn't keep in touch with Kay because he heard that I was married again, and he didn't want to mess up Kay's life too much. And he was kind of shy, so he didn't come back. But anyway, accidentally, my daughter was working for the highway department in Portland, and a man came in with an application for a job, and it turned out it was Dale's cousin. So she asked where he was, and she got in touch with him, and then through her, we found out that he wasn't married anymore, and my husband had just left me, so we got together again, and we commuted for quite a while. He came to see me in LeGrand until we finally got married. But, so I left there about 70, and then I decided that I wasn't going to let that happen to me again, that I wasn't going to be up the creek without a paddle and not be able to support myself. So I went through the Commission for the Blind. I went to school and learned to be a better typist and I studied to be a medical transcriber. But as it turned out, I got a job in the library in Seattle and as a receptionist, and I like that better. So.
Well, let's not leave this love story too fast, because I know it was tough to talk about earlier, but certainly it worked out for you in the long run. Now, your daughter, was she actively seeking him, or this purely by accident?
It was purely by accident. She often wondered about him, and she asked me, you know, what happened, and I said, well, we were just too young, which is the truth. We were just too young to know what we had. And so she just noticed the name, Zacharias, and she said, do you know Dale? And he said, yeah, it's my cousin, and my nephew, I guess. Yeah, it's nephew. So they, she got in touch with her dad and found out, when he found out I was free and he was free, well, he got in touch with me.
Did he come and see you then?
He called me, and then we decided that he would come down from Seattle to Portland to see Kay, and I'd go to Portland and see Kay, and that way we could see whether we still liked each other, which we did, but we didn't know whether we would or not after all those years.
Right.
So it turned out fine, but we didn't just start dating right away. It took us a while to kind of... He had not known me since I had lost all my sight, and I wasn't sure how he would accept that. And he wasn't sure what I was like or anything, so we had to kind of just take it almost like we were brand new meeting each other. It was almost that way in some ways.
Do you think it was better the second time around?
It was no better. I mean, because when I was married the first time to him, it was always young romance and,
right,
you know, that excitement of him being in a Navy uniform and all that. I mean, that was kind of neat. But we had a wonderful marriage this second time because we were grown up and we'd been through a lot, both of us, and we had so much in common. We were a little afraid that maybe when the new wore off, we wouldn't have a lot in common. You know, we'd just have the past, because at first we talked about the good old days, and then we found that we had so much in common. We liked to, you know, we liked to go camping, and we liked to go to plays, and we liked the same people. I mean, I liked his friends, he liked my friends, and we just, it worked out wonderfully. So we had a great marriage.
I want to thank you for helping us with the history project. You've given a lot of perspective on your life in Union County and the things that you encountered. And I appreciate interviewing you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.